This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We'll start off this week with the CBS Radio Workshop, their story from July 28, 1957, titled Never Bet the Devil Your Head. After that, it's the Sears Radio Theater and Climb, their story from February 16, 1979.
My name is Poe, Edgar Allan Poe. I write stories. Charges have been brought against me by certain ignoramuses that I have never written a tale with a moral. By way of mitigating these ridiculous accusations, I offer the following unusual history, a history about whose moral there can be no question whatsoever. For you can see the moral in its very title, Never Bet the Devil Your Head. And note, please, that I do not bring in the lesson at the tag end of the fable, as others are wont to do. Very well. Here, then, I denounce my critics and beg no favor other than your close attention. From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. The world too long thought of Edgar Allan Poe as a dour misogynist who concerned himself with black cats, gold bugs, pits, pendulums, and murder. Few realize, and fewer would believe, that this man of gloom had a sense of humor. This, the workshop now seeks to prove, in William N. Robeson's production of Edgar Allan Poe's satiric story, Never Bet the Devil Your Head, starring John Daner, with music conducted by Amerigo Marino, and with Jack Johnstone as guest director. It is not my design to vituperate my deceased friend, Toby Dammit. He was a sad dog, it is true, and a dog's death it was that he died. But he himself was not to blame for his vices. They grew out of a personal defect in his mother. I recall a conversation I had with her when Toby was a mere babe in arms.
Duties to a well-regulated mind, Mr. Poe, are always pleasures. It is my duty, and therefore my pleasure, to see that as quickly as possible my son learns the difference between right and wrong.
But must you flog him so, Mrs. Dammit?
Babies like tough steaks are invariably the better for beating. It drives the evil propensities out.
But my dear woman, you have the misfortune to be left-handed.
I do not consider left-handedness a misfortune.
No, you fail to understand me. Madam, a child flogged left-handedly had better be left unflogged.
And deign to tell me why?
The world revolves from right to left. If each blow in the proper direction drives out an evil propensity, it follows that every thump in an opposite one knocks its quota of wickedness in.
That is a specious argument that does not warrant a reply, except perhaps this.
I was all too often present at Toby's chastisements, and even by the way he kicked, I could perceive that he was getting worse and worse every day. At last I saw, through tears in my eyes, that there was no hope for the villain at all, and one day when he had been cuffed until he grew black in the face, that no effect had been produced beyond that of making him wriggle himself into a fit, I could stand it no longer, but went down on my knees forthwith, and uplifting my voice, made a prophecy of his ruin. For the fact is that his precocity in vice was awful. At 5 months of age, he got into such passions that he was unable to articulate. At 6 months, I caught him gnawing at a pack of playing cards. At 7 months, he was in the constant habit of catching and kissing female babies. At 8 months, he peremptorily refused to put his signature to the temperance pledge.
No, no, no.
Thus he went on increasing in iniquity month after month, year after year, until in his youth.
Mama, it is my desire to wear mustaches. And furthermore, I'll bet I can grow them. By the bill, book and candle, by Job's comforter, I'll bet I can.
As you see, he had even contracted a propensity for cursing and swearing, and for backing his assertions with bets. Not that he actually laid wagers. No, I will do my friend the justice to say that he would as soon have laid eggs. With him, the thing was a mere formula, nothing more. You see, he was detestably poor, another vice which the physical deficiency in his mother had entailed upon him. And this was the reason, no doubt, that his expletive expressions about betting seldom took a pecuniary turn. It was usually, I'll bet you what you please, or I'll bet you what you dare, or I'll bet you a trifle, or else, more significantly still, I'll bet the devil my head. At all events, through this most ungentlemanly practice, the ruin which I predicted for Toby Dammit overtook him at last. For indeed, the fashion had grown with his growth and strengthened with his strength, to the point that when he finally came to be a man, he could hardly utter a sentence without interlarding it with a proposition to gamble.
Devil me, Mr. Poe. It is and remains my contention that these United States shall serve as an arrow to the target of liberty. My wager on that, sir. I'll bet you what you please.
Toby, this habit of yours is an immoral one, and I feel constrained to tell you so.
Pish posh, Mr. Poe.
It is vulgar. I beg you to believe me.
Twaddle.
It is discountenanced by society. I say nothing but the truth.
Tush!
Gambling has been forbidden by an act of Congress. I entreat you, I implore you.
Utter foolishness.
Then, by heaven, I shall have to knock some sense into you.
That, sir, was a dastardly thing to do. Should you venture to try such an experiment again, I shall necessarily return in kind, and you will rue the result. I'll bet the devil my head you will.
Yes, there it was again. The quintessence of his abominable expressions. I'll bet the devil my head. But there was nothing more I could do. I quit the scene in desperation and in sorrow. However, I could not evade the fact that Mr. Toby Dammit's soul was in a perilous state. I resolved to bring all my eloquence into play to save it. I vowed to serve him as St. Patrick, in the Irish Chronicle, is said to have served the toad. That is to say, awaken him to a sense of his situation. So, I addressed myself to the task. I remonstrated with him. But to no purpose. I demonstrated in vain. I entreated. He smiled. I implored. He laughed. I preached. He sneered. I threatened. He swore. I pulled his nose. He blew it. And once again...
I'll bet the devil my head that taught you a lesson.
Toby, have you considered the gross impropriety of a man betting his brains like banknotes?
Should I?
You have adopted this mode of wager, I'll bet the devil my head, with a pertinacity and exclusiveness of devotion that displeases me no less than it surprises me. Now, the truth is...
I'll bet the devil my head I'm going to get another lecture from you.
The truth is, there is something in the air with which you are wont to give utterance to this offensive expression, something in your manner of enunciation which... for want of a more definite term, I must be permitted to call queer.
Oh?
It is your soul I am considering, Toby. Otherwise, you must believe this. I would not be speaking to you of these matters when I am so aware of your distaste for them. For some moments, he remained silent, merely looking me inquisitively in the face. But presently, he threw his head to one side and elevated his eyebrows to a great extent. Then he spread out the palms of his hands and shrugged up his shoulders. Then he winked with the right eye. He repeated the operation with the left. Then he shut them both up very tight. Then he opened them both so very wide that I became seriously alarmed for the consequences. And applying his thumb to his nose, he made a disgusting, indescribable movement with the rest of his fingers. Finally, setting his arms akimbo, he condescended to reply.
Mr. Poe, I would be obliged to you if you would hold your tongue. I wish none of your advice. I despise your insinuations, equivocations, adumbrations. In short, sir, your entire peroration.
I am of sufficient age to take care of myself. Or is it your misconception to consider me still an infant? Sir, do you mean to impugn my character? Is it your intention to insult me? Are you a fool, sir? Tell me, is your maternal parent aware of your absence from the domiciliary residence?
I beg your...
I put this question to you as a man of veracity, and I will bind myself to abide by your reply. I demand once more. Does your mother know you're out? Your confusion betrays you. I'll bet the devil my head she does not. And so I bid you, Mr. Poe, good day.
He left my presence in quite undignified haste. It were well for him that he did so. My anger had been aroused. For once, I would have taken him up on his insulting wager. Bet the devil my head, indeed. And I would have won for Satan, Mr. Dammit's little head, because, you see, the fact is, my whereabouts was known by my mother. Ah, well, it was in the pursuance of my duty that I had been insulted, so I bore the insult like a man. And it now seemed to me that I had done all that could be required of me in the case of this miserable individual. I resolved to trouble him no longer with my counsel, but to leave him to his conscience and himself. But I must confess that although I forbore to intrude with my advice, I could not quite bring myself to give up his society altogether. Worse, I even went so far as to humor some of his less reprehensible propensities, and there were times when I found myself lauding his wicked jokes, but with tears in my eyes, so profoundly did it grieve me to hear his evil talk.
Oh, by the great horned toad, Mr. Poe, your aptitude for companionship, without censure or reprimand, has taken a turn for the better. It puts me in mind of the gentleman from New York, Mr. Greeley, who importuned a man of tender years to seek the western shores, remember? Yet, to my knowledge, he never made the trek himself. Oh, yes. Unsought advice is like a woman left waiting at the church. Uncalled for.
Well, perhaps.
Zounds and hellions, sir. I'll bet the devil my head if you cannot agree on that.
Well, all right, Toby. Toby, what's to become of you?
Oh, your concern is, touching, Mr. Poe. But it smacks of your former attitude, and I shall have none of it. None, I say. Come, it's too fine a day to spend it on peradventure and mayhap pursuits. Let us stroll the roadside in the country lane, commune with nature in her pristine glory, seek the unfettered pleasures of the here and the now. Well, sir?
Very well, Toby. Thus it was that we strolled out together, arm in arm, our route leading us in the direction of a river.
Ah, there, Mr. Poe. You see? Beyond the stream, that field of fluorescence. Would not the Roman goddess herself exclaim over its perfection?
It is beautiful.
Beautiful? By the sons of Saul, your words make a beggary of faultless grandeur. My friend, your jaundiced eye requires closer appraisal, and your stopped-up nose a clearer whiff.
But it's only a field of trees and flowers. I can see it very well from here.
Stuff and nonsense. If you possessed a whit of perspicacity, that same jaundiced eye would indicate a covered bridge within a stone's throw. We shall cross it, go beyond it, and wander lonely as a cloud, to steal a phrase from one of the English greats. Come now.
The bridge was roofed over by way of protection from the weather, and the archway, having but few windows, was thus uncomfortably dark and echoed resoundingly. As we entered the passage, the contrast between the external glare and the interior gloom struck heavily upon my spirits. Not so upon those of the happy Dammit, who offered to bet the devil his head that I was hipped. He seemed to be in unusual good humor. He was excessively lively, so much so that I entertained I know not what of uneasy suspicion. A certain species of austere Merry Andrewism seemed to beset my friend and caused him to make quite a tomfool of himself.
Edgar Allan Poe!
Up here, on the railing, I'm a bird. I fly.
Whee! Nothing would serve him but wriggling and skipping about under and over everything that came in his way, now shouting out and now lisping out all manner of odd little and big words. I really could not make up my mind whether to kick him or to pity him.
Antediluvian transcendentalism! Whee! Anti-disestablishmentarianism!
At length, having passed nearly across the bridge, we approached the termination of the footway when our progress was impeded by a turnstile of some height. Through this, I made my way quietly, but this turn would not serve the turn of Mr. Dammit.
Paul, this mechanism, Mr. Paul. Are we cattle to be impeded in this manner?
It's merely a turnstile. I pass through it without
it's
any...
It's merely a turnstile. While me, I defy it.
How can you defy an inanimate object?
By leaping over it. Not only shall I leap over it, but I shall perform a buck and wing at the apex of my jump.
Oh, but Toby, it's nearly 5 feet in height.
A bagatelle.
Ah, you're a braggadocio. You cannot do it, and you know you can't.
No? I'll bet the devil my head I can. You hear me? I'll bet the devil my head.
I was about to reply, notwithstanding my previous resolution, with some remonstrance against his impiety, when suddenly I heard, close at my elbow, a slight cough, which sounded very much like the ejaculation...
A hem.
I started and looked about me in surprise. My glance, at length, fell into a nook in the framework of the bridge, and there, upon the figure of a little old gentleman, of, shall we say, venerable aspect, yes, and of reverend appearance, for he not only had on a full suit of black, but his shirt was perfectly clean, and the collar turned very neatly down over a white cravat, while his hair was parted in front like a girl's. His hands were clasped pensively together over his stomach, and his two eyes were carefully rolled up into the top of his head. Upon observing him more closely, I perceived that he wore a black silk apron over his small clothes, and this was a thing which I thought very odd. Before I had time to make any remark, however, upon so singular a circumstance, he interrupted me. To this second observation, I was not immediately prepared to reply. The fact is, remarks of this laconic nature are nearly unanswerable. I am not ashamed to say, therefore, that I turned to Mr. Toby Dammit for assistance. Dammit, what are you about? Don't you hear? The gentleman says, ahem. I looked sternly at my friend while I thus addressed him, for, to say the truth, I felt particularly puzzled. And when a man is particularly puzzled, he must knit his brows and look savage, else he looks like a fool. Toby, dammit! Although this sounded very much like an oath, believe me, nothing was further from my thoughts. Dammit! The gentleman says, ahem! I do not attempt to defend my remark on the score of profundity. I did not think it profound myself, but I have noticed that the effect of our speeches is not always proportionate to their importance in our own eyes. But if I had knocked Toby on the head with the turnstile itself, he could hardly have been more discomfited than when I addressed him with those simple words.
You don't say so. Are you quite sure he said that? Well, at all events, I'm for it now, and may as well put a bold face upon the matter. Here goes, then. Ahem! Ahem! Ahem!
Strangely, the little old gentleman seemed pleased. God only knows why. He left his station at the nook of the bridge, came forward with a gracious air, took Dammit by the hand, and shook it cordially, looking all the while straight up in his face with an air of the most unadulterated benignity it is possible for the mind of man to imagine. Finally, he spoke.
Well, well, Toby Dammit.
That's right, good sir. And what think you of my assertion and my wager?
That you can leap the turnstile?
Correct you are, and perform with consummate skill a buck and wing at the apex of my leap.
I am quite sure you will win your wager, Dammit, but we are obliged to have a trial, you know, for the sake of mere form.
Ahem. A trial, you say? Ahem.
My friend took off his coat with a deep sigh and tied a pocket handkerchief around his waist. He produced an unaccountable alteration in his countenance by twisting up his eyes and bringing down the corners of his mouth. I did not express myself aloud, but I thought, this is a quite remarkable silence on the part of Toby, dammit, and is no doubt a consequence of his verbosity upon a previous occasion. I wonder if he has forgotten the many unanswerable questions which he propounded to me so fluently on the day when I gave him my last lecture.
Him!
The old gentleman now took him by the arm and led him more into the shade of the bridge, a few paces back from the turnstile.
My good fellow, I make it a point of conscience to allow you this much run. Wait here till I take my place by the stile, so that I may see whether you go over it handsomely and don't omit any flourishes of the buck and wing. A mere form, you know. I will say, 1, 2, 3, and away! And mind you start at the word away.
The little gentleman stood there a moment, looking quietly at Toby as though appraising him. Then he turned, walked away, and took his position by the stile. Again he paused a moment, as if in profound reflection, then looked up and smiled very slightly, tightened the strings of his apron, and took a long, long look at Dammit. I thought to myself, what right has the old gentleman to make any other gentleman jump? Who is he? If he asks me to jump, I won't do it, and that's flat, and I don't care who the devil he is. The devil he... But what I said, or what I thought, or what I heard, occupied only an instant. The black-suited little man gave the word as agreed upon.
1, 2, 3, and away!
I saw Toby run nimbly and spring grandly from the floor of the bridge, cutting the most awful flourishes with his legs as he went up. I saw him high in the air, buck and winging it to admiration. I thought it a singular thing that he did not continue to go over, but the whole leap was the affair of a moment. And before I had a chance to make any profound reflection, down came Mr. Dammit on the flat of his back, on the same side of the stile from which he had started. At the same instant, I saw the old gentleman running off at the top of his speed. But ere leaving us, he had caught and wrapped up in his apron something that fell heavily into it from the darkness of the arch just over the turnstile. At all this, I was much astonished, but I had no leisure to think, for Mr. Dammit lay particularly still, and I concluded that his feelings had been hurt, and that he stood in need of my assistance. I hurried up to him and found that he had received what might be termed a serious injury. Quite serious. Quickly, I threw open an adjacent window of the bridge, and the sad truth flashed upon me. About 5 feet above the top of the turnstile, there extended a flat iron bar that served to strengthen the structure. With the edge of this brace, it appeared evident, the neck of my unfortunate friend had come precisely in contact. And alas, the truth is, he had been deprived of his head. He did not long survive his terrible loss. Despite the efforts of the physicians, he grew worse and, at length, died. So I bedewed his grave with my tears, worked a bar sinister on his family escutcheon, and assumed the general expenses of his modest funeral. Exit Toby Dammit. Toby Dammit, a lesson to all riotous livers, and proof absolute of my initial assertion that every tale should have, must have, does have, a moral.
You have just heard John Daner in the CBS Radio Workshop's production of Never Bet the Devil Your Head, under the guest direction of Jack Johnstone. It was adapted for radio by Alan Botzer, with music composed and conducted by Amerigo Marino. Heard in the supporting cast were Eleanor Audley, Leon Ledoux, Dawes Butler, Richard Beals, and Howard McNear. Next week, from New York, the workshop will present The Heart of Man, a dramatization of a surgical operation in which the heart itself is the principal actor. Hugh Douglas speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
It's 9 minutes past 10. Time for your Sears Theater. The Sears Radio Theater will present a story of two men in crime.
Jack, you all right?
Yeah. I'm working on a hold.
A blind man would have a handhold by now. Will you help me?
Your host, Richard Widmark, will be with you after this message from your local station.
I'm lost and lonely, scared and sad, trembling at the thought of making you mad. My love is yours, but at times you're so cold. If life's like this, take me before I grow old.
This song was written by a man now serving time in a state prison. Most of the men and women in prison today were abused children, and many abused children grow up to abuse their own children. Child abusers can be helped. Find out how. Write Prevent Child Abuse, Box 2866, Chicago, Illinois, 60690.
Please stop the hurt I've suffered since my birth. Join the abused child's fight.
Message of the Ad Council and the National Committee for Prevention of Child Abuse.
This is Richard Widmark. When formed by eruptive agencies, the birth of a mountain is a violent event. Vesuvius, Hood, Rainier, and Shasta are a few examples. Their surfaces bulged upward by cooled volcanic materials. However, the world's great mountain chains, the thin-aired Andes, the majestic Rockies, and the giants of the Himalayas, were formed beneath the earth under much less dramatic circumstances, known as folding. Direct aid climbers today use steel pitons and nylon rope to challenge forbidding heights that superstitious men 2 centuries earlier believed the domicile of dragons. They pit brain and muscle against the impassable for momentary triumph atop breathless grandeur. And in risking death for triumph over a mountain's natural terrors, no expedition ever disgraced itself by admitting defeat and turning back. But what if you find yourself, as Jack DeShields and Dan Hunt do, on a climb where you can't turn back and you can't go forward, cut off from help? And that's only the beginning of our story.
Sears Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. Brought to you 5 nights a week by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops. Your hosts,
Lorne Green. I'll bring you stories of the Old West and the New.
Andy Griffith with a look at the funny side of life.
Vincent Price with tales of mystery and suspense.
Cicely Tyson with stories about love, hate, and related things.
Richard Widmark. I'll bring you stories of pure adventure.
5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis production of The Sears Radio Theater. Our story, Climb, by Bruce Martin. Our stars, Vic Perrin and Stephen Markle.
When I need advice, I go to my mom.
Why not? It's free.
Now that I'm married and moving into a new house, I want all the advice I can get. So when mom says shop Sears, I listen.
You should. Sears is a great help on those big items you'll need for your new home. Major appliances like washers, dryers, and refrigerators. They'll deliver, install, and service. I always depend on Sears. You should too.
Sears, 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 where America shops.
I can't believe they can do it for $19.99.
Installed? The aluminized Sears muzzler is only $19.99 installed. And listen to the muzzler promise.
Sears promises that the muzzler will last as long as you own your American-made car.
Or return it for refund or replacement free.
And if Sears installed it, they'll install the new one free.
Well, you can't beat that.
I think it's fantastic.
It's a great promise.
The muzzler, just $19.99 installed. Clamps, if needed, 99 cents each extra. Sizes to fit most American-made cars. Prices may vary in Alaska and Hawaii at most Sears Tire and Auto Centers.
Generations ago, families dined by the warmth of the open hearth. Today, Sears rekindles this spirit with its open hearth dining room furniture. Faithfully rendered early American designs and careful workmanship give it an heirloom quality. The satin glow and warm highlighting of Sears open hearth take 26 steps to achieve. There's no shorter method to bring out the beauty of the wood. And like all good furniture, open hearth is made to last for a long time with sturdy tongue and groove and mortise and tenon construction. Choose from 16 different pieces of open hearth at most Sears retail stores.
Hey, look, in here, inside this stylish man's dress shirt. I'm a Sears Value dress shirt label just popping with pride because Sears Value dress shirts are sure to be popular for a number of reasons. They have fashion spread collars, come in classic patterns and solids in short and long sleeves. You'll appreciate the perma-pressed polyester or polyester cotton blends for easy care, plus at low value prices, what a buy! Just look for me, the Value dress shirt label at Sears Men's Store, where style, sense, and satisfaction combine to label me right for you.
If you were standing at the base of Long's Peak, 10 miles outside Estes Park in Colorado, you might be able to see the figures of two climbers as they move upward on what is called the Diamond Face. 1,700 smooth vertical feet of rock on the east base of Long's Peak. Unfortunately, as Jack DeShields and Dan Hunt continue their arduous ascent, there is no one standing below to observe their progress. At this moment, however, right now, you are up there with Jack and Dan as they climb.
That's odd. The rock surface shows signs of extreme wear, but I swear I pounded that piton in solid. That's out okay. I'll clip a carabiner through the piton's eye and slip in the climbing rope.
Need more slack on your running line?
No, you're doing fine, Dan. Keep me on a tight belay, though. Surface on this part of the Diamond Face is glass smooth.
Roger, Wilco. Bilko, I have you belayed on a red alert. How old is the Diamond Face?
Well, the whole Rocky Mountain range is relatively young. A toddler from the Mesozoic era. 60, 70 million years old. Climbing.
Climb. I think what's so incredible is the Diamond Face will challenge rock climbers centuries after you and I conquer her today.
Good climbers appreciate mountains, experience them. Conquering isn't involved.
That's your personal philosophy, Jack?
Oh, I have only one philosophy on a climb. The leader never falls.
I knew there had to be some compensation for looking up your backside the last 2 hours. I'm allowed to fall. Now, don't get me wrong. I appreciate hanging 3/4 of the way up 1,700 feet of sheer rock wall as much as the next guy. I'm just looking forward to sticking another flag in the relief map on my den wall tonight.
Concentrate on reaching the summit first, okay, Dan?
I'm right behind, below you.
The lead piton's pulling out. Falling.
Belay on. Help me out, Jack. Grab a handhold. Jack, you all right?
Yeah. I'm working on a hold.
A blind man would have a handhold by now. Will you help me?
I am blind. I can't wipe the blood out of my eyes when I'm digging my fingers into rock.
Blind? Above you, to your left. The outcropping where you hit your head.
I've got a handhold. Pull me up a bit.
I'm pulling.
Okay. I'm standing on the outcropping.
How bad are you hurt?
Well, blood's running into my eyes.
Don't move. You move an inch either way, you'll be in orbit. I can't belay you and pound a piton at the same time.
How far did I fall?
The slack on your belaying rope was about 10 feet. A leader fall is double the distance of the running line, roughly 20 feet. I put the carabiner through the piton and clipped on your running line. You're tied to the Diamond Face.
I'm not asking for a blow-by-blow account. Wipe the damn blood out of my eyes.
Coming down.
Double-check your holds coming down.
Does a horse make big potty in its stall?
Why another piton?
Because you were right. This part of the diamond face is all glass. Of course, you hit your head on the only outcropping for 50 feet.
Dan, I feel blood running down my chest inside my shirt.
Let me tie in before I put on my surgical gloves. I'm sure it's nothing. 30 or 40 stitches won't close.
Oh, you really know how to keep up a guy's morale.
And I'm digging the first aid kit out of my pack from behind the bologna sandwiches.
Don't you dare ask me if I'm hungry.
You read my mind. Okay, cotton balls, iodine. Turn your face to me. Oh, wow, Jack, you're a 6-foot replica of the Red Sea. The mountain ripped the Panama Canal under both your eyebrows.
Well, head wounds usually bleed worse than they are. Spare me the commentary and wipe the blood out of my eyes.
I'd love to, but the blood won't stop. I'm prescribing gauze and canceling the climb.
You wrap gauze around my eyes and you condemn me to die on this mountain.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Watch you bleed to death?
Nobody's ever led a blind man off a mountain peak like the Diamond Face. I've handled technical climbs for 13 years, I know.
The blood isn't only inside your shirt, it's dripping on your boots.
You wipe the blood out of my eyes and I'll climb.
Listen a minute and you'll hear the drip.
Do it.
If there was another...
Just do it.
I carry prescription codeine in my first aid kit.
Exactly what I want to do, immobilize myself. You're wrapping enough gauze around my eyes to muffle a gunshot.
What happened up there? I heard you yell your piton had pulled out, and I braced for the belay.
I hammered the piton into a patch of rotten rock.
Rotten rock? The piton sounded solid. You even tested it.
We weren't listening. We were talking. When rock is piton compatible, each hammer blow carries an increasingly higher pitch, and I didn't listen.
But rotten rock? On this mountain, the Diamond Face?
Yeah, rotten rock from the spring thaw. The heavy snows melt and pour down the summit in a waterfall. The runoff strikes the rock wall where I tried to sink that piton. Geez, Dan, I haven't been blindfolded since the last time I played pin the tail on the damn donkey. Oh,
the blindfold's only temporary. You'll get your sight back. There. I taped your head bandage. Hey, you buckling?
No basket case. Little sewing machine knee, that's all. Too much muscle tension in the legs.
Now move your right leg half a foot. That's it. Now plant. Better?
Yeah. Yeah, the muscles are relaxed again.
Okay. What's our next move?
We've only got one move. You tie me to the mountain and you go for help.
What happens an hour from now when you cramp up with sewing machine knee again? I don't recommend stretching your legs on this rock face without looking.
Dan, this is our first and probably our last climb together. Now, you mentioned a wonderful wife and some kids. How many?
It's a beautiful wife and a couple of wonderful kids. Amy will be 8 this month. Diane's 5.
Now, if you don't want to spoil Amy's 8th birthday party and maybe save my life at the same time, you get your butt down the mountain.
Amy asked to come along this morning. She said she wanted to watch me. I refuse to leave you in an untenable position.
I'm not getting through to you. Nightfall catches us on the Diamond Face the way we are without proper equipment. We're dead.
Nobody could yell for help or signal. Any hikers on the trail below should see us.
What hikers? We made a late start driving out of Denver this morning. We'd have passed any hikers back on the Chasm Lake Trail.
And then maybe a ranger.
The ranger at the check-in station told us what to expect climbing out of season. Solitude.
Okay. No hikers to help. We can still try to signal the ranger station.
With what? Smoke? Rock doesn't burn, Dan.
I thought we could nail a couple of shirts or the packs to the Diamond Face and set them on fire.
Throw in your pants and underwear, too. The station's a good 2-hour hike from the Diamond Face.
2 hours.
Well, that's why you have to leave now.
That's why I can't leave. Sunset's in 4 hours. 2 hours to the ranger station, and 2 hours back puts you in darkness. It'd be a night you'd never survive, not with your head injury.
Oh, you'd rather hold my hand through the night and maybe die with me.
I'm asking you to come up with an alternative. You're the Class 6 climber. You scaled the Diamond Face 3 times before today's assault. Tell me our options.
We have no options. We're too high up on the face to make a safe rappel down.
Sure. Under normal conditions, rappelling would be the fastest exit out of danger, but you can't see. A blind rappel is out of the question.
I've rappelled in darkness when I've had to. But we lack a decent belay point, so unfortunately, rappelling is out.
What are the chances on a slow descent?
Without eyes, less than 0. There were 6 decent handholds on the way up the Diamond Face. I'd be totally dependent on equipment holds. Tie me in. I prefer my chances against the night.
Well, we might have more of a chance than you think on a descent. Gravity pull would be weaker, less strain on the muscles.
Fine, except this bandage doesn't allow me to see my footing. I know a secure handhold by feel, but footing...
I'll guide you.
No, thanks. You'll guide me into a free fall without a parachute.
At least consider it as an option.
A blind man has a million to one shot climbing up or down the diamond face without falling. So we're back to tying me in.
Have you noticed how disgustingly excellent our climbing weather has been today? I mean, who could ask for more? Warm sun, healthy breeze to cool you, maddeningly comfortable.
Yeah, it's been grand.
All that grandeur at our feet. Tiny chasm lake at the Diamond Face base, clay-red saber-tooth Rocky Mountains stretching off into the horizon.
Oh,
even a few snow caps. The most seductive torture chamber ever created by a lousy 20-foot fall.
Dan, nobody at the Sierra Club will call you a coward for going for help. They'll praise your common sense.
I'd like to change the view.
Say that again?
I said I'd like to change the view. Take it in from a safe piece of terra firma.
You stubborn novice. You did it. You came up with the option we needed.
I did?
Yeah. Granted, a blind man can't climb up or down the diamond face, and you won't tie me in because the sheer rock structure hasn't a single secure position.
Right.
But if we move off the diamond face horizontally until we find a secure position, you could tie me in and go for help.
Sounds good.
Sounds beautiful. I've been hanging in this spot so long, my finger muscles are bunched up into my shoulders. Oh, tell me the diamond face layout.
I'm looking at 30, 35 feet of sheer rock to the first salient position on my right.
Yeah.
The left side is definitely out. It's at least 100 feet across the diamond face in that direction.
I've got a map in my pack.
Oh, hold still. I'll have a look.
I have a picture of the mountain in my mind. I remember a less technical route traced off to the right side of the diamond face.
Yeah, I've got the map open.
Well, you see it?
I see the cable route, keyhole route.
No, you're at the summit. You're too far up on the map.
The wind's picking up.
It's an afternoon characteristic to the diamond face.
According to this ranger map, the summit is accessible by a hiking trail from the other side of the mountain. If we could reach the summit by dark, we'd be able to walk down the backside tomorrow morning.
We're nowhere near the summit. Now, our concern is getting off the diamond face. Go a quarter down the diamond and move a few degrees to the right. That's our position.
Are you talking about Stettner's ledges?
Yeah. I did the Stettner descent route once. Excellent climbing surface the entire way. Plenty of footing.
Stettner's ledges sounds like the place we want. Now the map's blown away. Jack, you holding?
Yep.
What is it?
Devil winds.
I knew the Diamond Face experienced afternoon summer storms, but I thought by late September...
Just be happy this isn't summer. Those summer storms are renowned for a high incidence of lightning.
Oh, great. What else can I expect?
The devil winds to return.
What happens if the devil winds return when we're crossing the Diamond Face?
We'll both be blown to kingdom come.
Nearly everyone at our party mentioned our new Sears Dream Supreme carpeting.
Did anyone say anything about my rutabaga dip?
Marvin said Dream Supreme looks so thick and luxurious. He loved its velvety soft plush pile.
What about my rutabaga dip?
Eloise adored the color.
Of my rutabaga dip?
I told her that avocado lime is just one of Dream Supreme's 20 lustrous colors, and when Doris heard that Dream Supreme is so reasonably priced and treated with Scotchgard brand fabric protector...
Okay, what about my tuna fish upside down cake?
Dream Supreme carpeting in most larger Sears retail stores. Oh, here I go again. It's time to rent one of those steam-type carpet cleaners.
Why rent? Now Sears puts power in a carpet cleaner you can own yourself. The Power Spray from Sears for easy home carpet cleaning. Power Spray sprays hot water into your carpet, then sucks up the dirty water.
You can see the dirt you get out. Dirt you didn't even know was there.
The Power Spray Carpet Cleaner, a convenient carpet cleaner you can own yourself. Available at most Sears retail stores. Kenmore. Solid as Sears.
Hey, look, in here, inside this stylish man's dress shirt. I'm a Sears Value dress shirt label just popping with pride, because Sears Value dress shirts are sure to be popular for a number of reasons. They have fashion spread collars, come in classic patterns and solids in short and long sleeves. You'll appreciate the perma-pressed polyester or polyester cotton blends for easy care, plus at low value prices, what a buy! Just look for me, the Value Dress Shirt label, at Sears Men's Store, where style, sense, and satisfaction combine to label me right for you.
I love to eat.
But it takes so long to cook.
That's why we both love our new Kenmore microwave oven from Sears.
I can cook a 5-pound roast medium rare in just 30 minutes, or 3 strips of bacon in 3.5 minutes on a paper plate. Bake 2 potatoes in 8 minutes and cook vegetables faster than boiling them in water.
That means less time in the kitchen.
And more with you.
Fast, clean, cool cooking with Sears Kenmore microwave ovens, all with automatic defrost. Choose the right model for your kitchen from the many styles available at most Sears retail stores.
On the sheer diamond face of Long's Peak in Colorado, two men continue a climb in the course of which one slip will bring death to both of them. Jack DeShields is a Class 6 direct aid climber, a professional who has been temporarily blinded by an accidental fall. Dan Hunt, his companion, is a mountaineering apprentice and father of two, upon whose eyes their lives now depend. Can you imagine what two men in such a situation would be talking about while one of them hammers life-giving steel pitons into the rock wall of the diamond face? Just listen. You are with them.
The whole Sierra Club is on the edge of its collective seat listening to your talk.
Oh, I noticed an ample supply of yawns.
Believe me, nobody was yawning. Not many professionals have climbed mountains on each of the continents. I guess today is your toughest setback ever.
I don't follow you. I'm hanging here talking, listening to you sink a piton.
And I'm one of the seven dwarfs. You unhooked yourself from the belaying rope.
When we cross the diamond face, my footing won't be as secure as yours. I see no reason in pulling you off the mountain with me.
I'm reclipping your running line.
Even though I'm temporarily blind, some decisions remain my responsibility.
Wrong, Jack. I make the decisions now. You have the knowledge, the experience, and probably the stamina, but I have the eyes.
I'm grateful that you're concerned with my safety, but this...
I reclipped you to my running line not because I'm worried you might fall, but because I'm selfish. I'm afraid I might fall. And you better belay me when I yell falling.
I'll do my best. Pray lead on, O sighted one.
I'll tie you in on Stettner's ledges. Back up piton every 6 feet across the diamond face should give us a fighting chance.
In our case, I'd say don't bet on it, but couldn't hurt. When fall impact yanks a lead piton out of rock, the secondary pitons usually follow in rapid succession.
Remember when you went to the circus? How the crowd gasped when the ringmaster announced the high wire act was performing without a net?
Yes, sure.
Well, what we're crossing doesn't even have a wire. Ready to test the backup?
I feel like a kid testing the water temperature with his toe.
Well, your form wouldn't make the cover of a field handbook, but nobody's watching anyway. On a direct line from your head, arm's length away, you'll find a crack in the rock wall that might pass for a handhold.
What do you mean, might pass?
I only spot the holes. You decide whether the hole will support your weight.
Found it.
You can't stop between holes like that. You'll fall.
What was that move worth, a foot?
You're selling yourself short by half a foot.
Good. This pace will reach Stettner's ledges in moonshine.
Determination makes its own time.
A positive thinker and nowhere to hide. Somebody save me.
Please, no negative vibes. I'm trying to believe what I'm saying myself.
You know, you'll wear yourself out machine hammering that way.
Yeah, I'm a regular hammering dynamo. But this wind affects my efficiency. Jack, the devil wind isn't coming back, is it?
Probably.
Oh, thanks. My paranoia needed feeding.
Anytime. I take it when the hammering stops. That's my signal to prepare for my next foot and a half leap.
You got it. Feet and handholds are in a direct line. 3 feet apart, it's your furthest reach.
You know, don't you, that you're taking liberties with the blind?
I've got you belayed if you slip. Besides, I want to test my system. That's it. Plant your feet. Your handhold's a couple of inches higher up.
No good. I can't find it. Your backup holding?
You only fell a few inches. Everything's under control.
Oh, I'd trade these worthless fingers for anything that'd chip rock.
Now, the belaying rope slacked off. You found a hold.
Foothold. My fingers are wedged in a hairline crack.
Keep moving.
I'm spread like a freshly skinned hide hung out to dry.
You move out that hold or I can't ease up on the belaying rope.
Brace yourself.
I'm holding you.
Move. The pitons.
Keep searching for a hold.
This isn't working.
Keep searching for something that isn't... Ah, got one. I see another hole above your left ear.
Okay. I'm planted.
We made good progress. 5-6 feet.
You call it progress. I call it scrambling for my life. Oh, you didn't bargain for this when you volunteered to guide me across the Diamond Face.
I knew what I was buying into. I told you, our act has no wire.
I'm talking about fatigue. Fatigue makes the best of climbers careless, and on this rock wall, carelessness kills.
Only another 25 feet to Stettner's ledges. I promise not to get careless.
Well, you already are careless. Your line of protective pitons scars the mountain, and you've no plan for extracting them.
I think other climbers will forgive us the pitons we leave behind under the circumstances.
That's not my point. You're pressing. And that's careless. Now you tie me in and get out while you can.
Your next hold comes direct from the Alpine catalog, custom made. And extend your right leg halfway. Plant. Plant.
It's all right. I'm on. My fingers feel raw. I think I scraped all the skin off my knuckles, too.
A few bloody fingers won't do you any harm. Come on already.
Coming.
Coming.
How far?
Another 5 feet, and we've reached Stettner's ledges. You ready?
Yeah. And able. I have my reservations about willing.
Straight out from your shoulder, you'll feel a depression in the Diamond Face.
I'm touching it now.
I didn't find any prominent holes next to the rock ledge like I expected. You might be able to push across the depression and brace your feet on its lip.
Are you on the rock ledge?
No, I'm hanging right beside it. I'll help you onto the ledge first and then climb on.
Right. I'm pushing across. This position isn't secure at all.
Another couple of feet.
Falling.
Steady yourself.
I'm dragging on your belaying rope. I pray to God you have your footing.
I've got zip. The first piton pulled out. You're hanging on me, and I'm hanging on that last piton. Any second, it'll pull out, too.
How far am I from Stettner's ledges?
3 feet.
Grab any hold you can. I'm going to swing out onto the rock ledge.
You're on. You made it onto the ledge. Falling.
Belay on.
Oh, thank God. I'm below the rock ledge with good climbing surface. Climbing?
Climb.
Oh, man. It's nice to be alive. When I fell, I was sure you'd follow me down the mountain. How did you manage to hold on?
Once I pulled myself up onto the rock ledge, I braced my feet and my back against the mountain. I just reeled in the slack on the belaying rope as fast as I could until you yelled. Then it was a matter of being prepared for the fall impact. And fortunately, I was.
My waist rope was crushing my rib cage hanging on the end of that belay rope. Another 5 minutes and I'd be purple. How bad are you banged up?
I'm not sure. Ribs are a bit sore.
Your ribs have a right to feel sore. You were thrashed against the rock wall twice. Feel broken?
There's no way to tell unless I stand up. I'm too beat to move for the moment.
You and me both. Who is Stettner?
I don't know.
Well, whoever Stettner is, I appreciate the use of his ledge.
After we catch our breath, what would you think of making a try for the summit?
I'd think you were a figment of my imagination and that I was delirious.
We used all our pitons crossing the Diamond Face. I haven't any equipment left to tie you in.
You skunk. You planned that all along, didn't you?
If I did tell you, you'd never have crossed the Diamond Face. I couldn't leave you on the rock wall to die.
Oh, instead, you decided to lure me from one survival crisis to another without my knowledge. I resent being manipulated.
The ranger map pointed our way off this mountain. The way is up. We climb Stettner's ledges and walk down the backside trail tomorrow morning.
You idiot! You're gambling our lives on reaching the summit in less than 3 hours of daylight. That's asking a heck of a lot. Especially with a blind man for a handicap.
Sears Radio Theater will return after this message from your local station.
Well, it all started when my son Willard said,
Dad, you just don't understand how it is to be in my shoes.
And so I said,
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll do what you do for a day, and I'll see how it is.
Well, first it was great. I slept in till 20 minutes too, like Willard does. But then after school, Willard told me,
The garage is dirty. Would you mind cleaning it up?
And I told him,
I'll see about it later.
Willard, and he said,
You'll see about it
all
now.
All right, all right. And so I did. I wasn't very happy about it. Well, after supper, I thought I might catch a little TV, but then Willard reminded me,
Don't you have homework to do?
Two things I know for sure. One is, I'm going to work harder to understand how Willard feels. And two, I got to get Willard's shoes off. My feet are killing me.
Listening, caring, and sharing. That's what understanding is all about. From the Mormons, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Your lung association says smoke's not just your affair. That smoke screen that you puff around pollutes non-smokers' air. It's bad for kids and older folks with lungs not up to par. It's damaging for you, of course, but your smoke travels far. Your lung association says please keep this thought in mind. It's double damage all around and doubly unkind. So try to kick the habit and give everyone a break. Please do it for your life and breath and everybody's sake.
Your Lung Association and you know that cigarettes are a breathing hazard. Smokers, please don't add that extra offense. Give us a break for life and breath.
The concluding act of Climb.
This ledge has a flat surface, a couple of feet wide. We'll be able to walk for a little while. How about we take five?
Oh, we can't afford a break. What time is it?
3:10. We've been climbing for an hour straight. I want to sit down for a minute.
Your gamble either pays off in 2 hours or nightfall traps us on the mountain. The higher we climb the Stettner route, the more hazardous the rock surface becomes. And the harder it is to backtrack to tenable ground. It'll be totally dependent on your eyes to point out my footing near the summit. It's impossible to spot holes in the dark. So like it or not, we're in a foot race with a setting sun.
You're right. Darkness falls fast in the mountains. I wouldn't want to deprive myself of the pleasure of sticking another flag pin in my den map.
Where I can keep the center of gravity over my feet, I'll be able to climb by feel. You have to use your eyes to climb, like a chess game, several moves ahead. That way, we won't end up on a patch of rotten rock or blocked by a cul-de-sac. Some blind man like me would bump his nose against a cul-de-sac before he ever knew it was there.
Is the devil wind on this side of the mountain, too?
No. We're on the north face of Long's Peak.
A ledge ends here. At a junction of rock ledges. One line to the left, one to the right. Which do we take?
This mountain is not my hometown. The last time I took the Stettner route was 2 years ago. And we used a map to guide us down, not up.
Then we're faced with a small problem because we don't have a map. The wind blew it away. How do I know which is the safe route?
We won't have time to backtrack if we choose the wrong line. I'm depending on your eyes. You decide.
You said you remembered a steep pitch towards the summit?
Yeah.
We'll take the right line, then. Hope we're closer to the summit than I think we are. We climb side by side where possible, so I can qualify your holes.
Balance is everything on rock. Sometimes rock can look deceptively secure. Watch out for loose outcroppings.
Now, stick to a three-point stance. Yeah. Keep both feet and one hand planted. Let your free hand seek out the next hold. Spread eagle climbing tires you out, throws off your balance.
I'm aware of that. And I'm also aware of the time. We move fast or we lose.
Better the rocks fall on us. You don't sound too angry with me for manipulating you into this climb anymore.
I am. I haven't forgotten. It's difficult to punch out somebody you can't see.
I'm forewarned. I'll keep my guard up.
I'll either punch you out or I'll buy you a drink. Depends on my condition when I'm returned to civilization. What's the time?
3:40.
3:40 already? What's happened? What do you see?
You didn't mention anything about a chimney.
Chimney? I don't remember a chimney.
Well, there's one standing in our way. Runs a crooked line toward the summit. Impossible to determine what we'll find above it.
Well, we'll climb the chimney to the summit.
What if there's a cul-de-sac above the chimney? The game is over and we cash in our chips.
We find a cul-de-sac, we'll work our way back down to a wide ledge and spend the night. Now, I know three ways up a chimney. Counterforce, jamming, or, if you absolutely have to, the layback.
The chimney closes sharply at the top. We'll have to leave our packs behind. Too narrow for them to make it through.
Press and pull yourself up the funneling sides of the chimney, taking as much abrasion on the soles of your feet as you can. You keep your face and hands free, away from the rock, in case you slip. And for heaven's sake, be careful when jamming. You slip with your elbow jammed in a rock crack, and you're an instant basket case.
Climbing.
Climb. I'll let you clear a couple of feet before I follow. That way, if you kick down any loose rock, it won't have much momentum when it hits me.
Lots of prominent rock. You shouldn't have much trouble.
Well, chimney climbing requires more strength than skill. How far are you above me?
4 feet.
Yeah. It's good enough clearance. Climbing.
Rock. Rock.
Ah.
Sorry, Jack. Rock fell away when I touched it.
Don't let that slow you down. Sun won't wait for us to catch up. How much daylight we got left?
It's 4 o'clock. We're down to our last hour.
Hey, I grabbed your foot. What'd you stop for?
Air. I'm not used to chimney climbing. It burns me out.
Push yourself. I want to live, man.
My arm muscles are trembling.
Well, this run for the summit was your idea. Now move.
Rock, cleared me.
Keep moving.
We've reached the bottleneck. Almost out of the chimney. I feel miserable. My arms and legs are lead weights. I thought the whole point of climbing was to enjoy yourself.
You don't call this fun?
Maybe I'd enjoy myself more if you'd quit pushing me.
I stopped pushing you. You won't reach the summit.
Who needs who on this climb?
I don't remember asking to tag along.
I'm not in the habit of making an ass of myself. The mountain's getting to me.
The mountain's getting to both of us. My blindness doesn't help my disposition any either.
I'm twisting my way out of the bottleneck. There's a small ledge above the chimney. Watch your head.
Okay. I'm through the chimney.
My body's aching. I feel like a heavyweight champ's personal punching bag after a hard workout.
I'm a little worn around the edges myself. Dan, I can tell by the air temperature that twilight's fading fast. It could even be dark for all I know. Sun goes down, the night brings the cold. What's the real time?
I have half an hour at the outside to guide you up the pitch to the summit. I can see the summit from here.
Good news makes me antsy. Let's climb.
The pitch to the summit has a long, vertical crack running up the first 10 feet or so. I'll put your hand on it.
The crack should be secure enough to thread us up the first part of the pitch.
Wait for me to point out your next hole when you reach the end of the crack.
I promise not to wander off.
Rock, hold tight.
This root needs a little gardening work. My skin jumps every time you yell rock.
No sense trying to dodge the rocks you hear. You might lose your grip on the crack and fall. The belay line is useless now.
Alan, hook us.
Leave the belay line alone. We might need it later.
Where's my next hold?
Straight out from your shoulder. Use your right hand.
Yeah, it's a good hold.
Pull up on your hands until you're balanced, then plant.
This is fine.
Slow down.
Plenty of footing.
You're going to run me over.
Pick up the pace, will you? Sun will be down in a few minutes.
Not much to choose from around me now.
The air's growing colder.
Plant your left leg or you'll fall.
Okay. I'm planted. Will you move?
We've come to some loose rock. Hold on a minute.
We'll cross it and hope for the best. We haven't got time to wait.
Extend your right hand above your shoulder and bring it down slow.
Right.
You find a hold?
Well, this is another hairline crack. Isn't there anything better?
You want me to carry you up the summit, or are you able to help yourself?
I carry my own weight. I'd feel out my own holds, but the rock surface is too steep.
Rock outcropping above your left knee. Use your hand to make sure it isn't loose first. Then step up on the outcropping if it'll hold you.
The outcropping will hold. Where do I put my hands?
I'm looking.
You aren't buying this ground as an investment. You're climbing it. Come on already.
You're going to press us into a swan dive.
We got to keep moving before the sun goes down.
Good handhold, about 3-4 inches above your right ear. Find it?
This isn't what I call a good handhold, but it'll have to do. Twilight almost gone?
Yeah, twilight's fading fast. Another outcropping ahead of us, sort of a rock horn shape.
How much further after the rock horn?
I thought professional climbers had a sixth sense about summits. Can't you smell it?
How far?
Clear the rock horn, and I'll tell you. The horn is a solid, two-handed hold above you to your left.
I still don't smell summit, Dan.
Watch yourself. Keep your balance.
Oh, God, no. Footing fell out from under me. My fingers are locked together around the rock horn.
I'm planted on the ledge directly above you. I'll reel in the belaying rope and pull you up.
Hang on. You're wasting your time, Dan. I unhooked myself from the belaying rope back in the chimney.
Damn foolish move. I'll try to grab your wrist. You can pull up on my arm until you find your footing.
No way. You'd fall with me.
I'm planted tight on the ledge. You won't pull me off.
I can't see you, Dan. You lied to get me across the diamond face. How do I know you're not lying down? Look, this isn't worth both our lives.
Take my hand.
No. There must be a foothold.
I've got your wrist. Pull up on my arm.
That's it.
Pull.
You are one crazy man. You know that?
Yeah. So were the Wright brothers. Stand up and walk over here.
Stand up? You mean we made the summit?
Scout's on it.
We made it. We're off the mountain.
Hey, to walk away from the edge or I'll be up here by myself. Take my hand for a couple of steps.
Dan, thank you for saving my life. Any sensible man would have left me hanging on the diamond face.
I told you I've been out of my senses for years. Maybe after the doctors take that bandage off your head and you can see again, you help me pick up those pitons I left on the diamond face.
You name the day, and I'll climb with you. Now, how much time do we have left before sunset?
Sunset was an hour ago. We both finished the climb blind.
Our Are we finally set for Grandma's?
I think so. We've got the new Sears Travel Guard baby seat in the car.
Right, and the extra sleep and play baby seats.
Oh, Grandma will love those. They're so cute and yet practical.
The extra baby blankets and bottles are in the vinyl diaper bag.
Oh, Sears certainly did make shopping for the baby easy.
Sure did. Well, I think we've got everything.
Honey, I think you've forgotten something.
Hmm? The baby.
Your baby's room. Furnish it with the quaintness and charm of Sears Jenny Lind's crib, dresser, and chest. Your baby will be secure in our old-fashioned crib built with high sides and a safety drop-side latch. And each handsome maple color piece comes in a non-toxic finish. Sears Jenny Lind dresser and chest is furniture that will adapt gracefully as baby grows older, too. So visit us soon, because Sears has baby buys bundled up. Available at most Sears retail stores.
Presenting Sears' very charming spring shirt dress in small yarn-dyed woven checks, stripes, or plaids. It's a great versatile dress for work because to finish off the dress, Sears has conjured up a complimenting vest. Vests come lined or reversible in enchanting colors that work wonderful spells on the rest of your wardrobe, too. Sears vest plus a dress, the bewitchingly correct dress this spring. Available at most larger Sears retail stores.
I sell draperies at Sears. Yesterday, a lady came in and said that she'd been in and out of about every store in town looking for draperies and at this point didn't know what she wanted anymore. I asked questions about her tastes and decor and then made suggestions. She was thrilled. She found what she wanted and learned a little, too. It made me feel good to know that I helped her out. Sears people are friendly people who help you find what you want.
America. You've been listening to Sears Radio Theater, brought to you five nights a week by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops. Climb was written by Bruce Martin, produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your host was Richard Widmark. Our stars were Vic Perrin and Stephen Markle. The music for Sears Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. Mark Gilmore speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Sears Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you enjoyed this week's selections. Come back next Tuesday. We'll have another hour of the Relic Radio Show. Between now and then, there's more old-time radio at relicradio.com. Past episodes from this show, more old-time radio on the Shoutcast stream, and of course, the donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.